Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. The former head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the international community repeatedly ignored her predictions of violent conflict in South Sudan.
The problem first was that the leadership wanted to resolve their issues by themselves. They didn't succeed. The regional leaders were brought in too late, which implied that they didn't succeed either. And the same with friends of the South Sudanese from way back. So none of us managed to prevent the crisis.
And South Sudanese refugees are finding life difficult at refugee camps in Uganda.
I used to have a car that is Nissan Duster pickup, but now, because of the situation in the camp, I have no option than to sell that car out to push on, to add on what the UN has given.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of South Sudanese who had to leave their country because of violence in the country say it's difficult to survive on relief aid from humanitarian agencies. The refugees want the warring parties to end the fighting so they can go home. Former workers at local, national and international non-governmental organizations had to reduce their operations or completely shut down in parts of South Sudan due to the continued fighting. The Association of Christian Resource Organizations Serving Sudan, known by the acronym ACROSS, is one such organization. Its offices in Yei River State, Lasso Payam, were forced to close in August. Aloro Stephen, who worked for ACROSS in Yei, resettled at Rhino Camp of Ofwa Refugee Settlement in northern Uganda with his wife and two children. Stephen says he now has no income. He is urging South Sudan's leaders to seek peace so he and thousands of other South Sudanese can return home and resume their normal lives.
We were working, our children were in school, and now we have come here. You see, there are no schools here, and we need to take our children back to school and probably join our jobs back in South Sudan. Simply what I would advise or tell is that if the leaders would hear, they should come and settle their grievances through peace and so that we can come back to our home.
Lopai Moses is the founder of a local non-governmental organization known as Advocacy for Democracy, a local community-based organization in Yei. He and his wife and seven children recently fled to Rhino Camp to escape the violence in Yei. Moses says when they arrived at the camp, there was barely not enough to feed his family. He says he has been forced to sell some of their possessions to take care of his family needs.
I used to have a car that is Nissan Duster pickup, but now, because of the situation in the camp, I have no option than to sell that car out to push on, to add on what the UN has given.
The refugees say they are not getting enough to eat. They say once the UN distributes food items, they sell some of the items so that they can buy other things that they need to supplement their diet. However, Solomon Osakan, a Ugandan West Nile refugee desk officer under the office of the Prime Minister, said last week that refugees should not sell their food items.
A refugee is free to sell a few of the items and get some income and use it to buy some items that are not given by the refugee program. But if food gets out of the settlement in large quantities, then the donor community will not be willing to support refugees. It's like the refugees already have food. The food is being misused, which is really an issue of contention.
Tom Gerjoak fled violence in Wau in June and is now taking care of 15 members of his family at the Rhino refugee camp. Gerjoak was a vendor in Wau and used to make enough money to buy food, medicine and pay school fees for his children.
My word goes back to South Sudan leaders. I need them to come together and they should make our country, as it is a newborn country, they should maintain the peace. Not that they should leave us astray like this one.
According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, over 1 million South Sudanese are seeking shelter in neighboring Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan. That report was prepared by Tito Justin in Arua, Uganda. The first head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Hilde Johnson, who served from 2011 to 2014, has written a book entitled South Sudan, The Untold Story, From Independence to Civil War. The book explores the short history of South Sudan. Johnson told participants at an event in Washington yesterday that despite repeated warnings from UN staff on the ground that conflict in the country was imminent, the international community was not listening. She tells Ayen Bior she wrote the book because she wanted the world to see the journey of the conflict through her experience.
I think they needed to know both the policies of the leadership, the corruption issues, and what happened in the run-up to the crisis and the efforts made to try to prevent it from happening. So that was a very important motivation for me. And the second is that the world needs to know what happened and why. And so for me, it was giving my story is an important part of that effort.
And in recent weeks, the last couple of weeks, several actors have declared war on the government of South Sudan, including former First Vice President Riek Machar. The UN is now saying that at least 100,000 people are trapped in Yei, and there's sporadic fighting all across the country. Are you surprised at all by the recent developments?
Not at all surprised. This we could expect with the political situation unfolding as it did. The main concern now is that there needs to be a political process in place which includes all the signatories of the peace agreement to be able to rescue that process and put in place some kind of political chart that can end up in a caretaker government that has the support of all stakeholders. I think the problem with exclusion now is you will get spoilers. You will get spoilers with significant military capacity, and there will not be peace.
If you could travel back in time in your role as chief of UNMISS in South Sudan, is there anything that you would have done differently?
I probably would have done even more on the political side. I made huge efforts to bring reconciliation to the leadership, try to help establish retreats of the leadership, support the committee that was working to reconcile the leadership when the leadership crisis was ongoing. I also was party to bringing in regional leaders to try to resolve the crisis. These efforts were made, but probably it would have had to be tripled or quadrupled even further. But we just didn't succeed. And the problem first was that the leadership wanted to resolve their issues by themselves. They didn't succeed. The regional leaders were brought in too late, which implied that they didn't succeed either. And the same with friends of the South Sudanese from way back. So none of us managed to prevent the crisis. And I think the problem is that the warnings against ethnic violence that several of us brought to the table, and we did really insist that there is a huge risk of ethnic violence, were not heeded to. So I'm afraid in the end, this is the responsibility of the leadership. The international community, there are limits to what we can manage to do. And I'm not sure in the end that I would have been able to change anything. But of course, you always think you should have done more when you've seen what has unfolded afterwards.
On the note of ethnic violence, is this an ethnic conflict or a political conflict?
It is a political conflict. It's a power struggle that has turned ethnic. So ethnicity has been used as a tool in the power struggle by both sides. At the same time, of course, when you start using ethnicity in that way and events turn ethnic, in the end, they take on a life of their own as well. And I think it's a combination of the two that has happened. So the power struggle continues to be the problem. A political solution is the only way forward in relation to that, as the peace agreement showed. At the same time, stemming ethnic violence that has started to take a life of its own is very hard, but it's not impossible. And that's what we have to see happen now.
That's Hilde Johnson, former special representative of the UN Secretary General and the former head of the UN mission in South Sudan. Johnson is the author of a new book entitled South Sudan, the Untold Story from Independence to Civil War. She was speaking to VOA's Ayen Bior here in Washington. Sudan and South Sudan have signed two agreements paving way for the demarcation of the disputed border between the two countries. Officials of the Sudan-South Sudan Joint Border Commission agreed in Addis Ababa on terms of reference, a budget, and the work plan to demarcate the border of the two countries. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwey, who chairs the South Sudan Joint Border Commission, says the two countries formed a joint technical team that will work with the Joint Demarcation Committee. Makwey says the two delegations still disagree on the internal rules of procedures for the Joint Demarcation Committee, which will hopefully be worked out at the next meeting in November.
The government of Sudan insisted that that same document should be used as an authority for the joint technical team to prepare for the demarcation. We disagreed on that. The government of Sudan objected to the exclusion of that document from being referred to in the document, and that's why they refused to sign the document.
Both sides agreed to work out the demarcation of the Sudan-South Sudan border as part of the implementation of the cooperation agreement the two countries signed in September 2012. Makwey says he does not know when the actual demarcation of the more than 2,000-kilometer-long Sudan-South Sudan border will begin.
It is a process, and you don't just do it without the least preparatory work. Not that only, but even the joint technical team, which comprises of 40 from each side, this team must be trained on how to do the demarcation on the ground.
Makwey says that during the meeting, the two countries' delegations agreed on a budget of $60 million for the project. According to Makwey, both Sudan and South Sudan will contribute money for the demarcation process, and the African Union and the United Nations will also contribute. He did not elaborate on how much each country would pay for the exercise. Sudanese government officials were not available to comment on the story. Repeated calls to the Sudanese ambassador to Juba, Osama Berry, went unanswered. And a press officer at the Sudanese embassy in Nairobi, Neymat Ali, said, quote, "We have no information on the meeting," unquote. When contacted, the Sudanese government spokesman, Osman Belal, agreed to be interviewed in hours' time, but later switched off his phone. The Sudan news agency SUNA quotes Al-Rashid Harun, head of the Sudanese delegation to the meeting, as expressing Sudan's commitment to resolving the remaining issues with Juba at the November meeting. The two countries agreed in the 2012 cooperation agreement to demarcate their border based on its definition by the British colonial government in January 1956. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Lord State employees who refused to go to Raja will now continue to work in WOW. We will have more on that story shortly.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think children in your community receive a good education?
Children in my community, they don't receive a good education. Because currently, we have just ended a crisis here, which stopped children in school for some time.
The economic situation in the country and the poverty status in the country is defeating the purpose of children having quality education.
Children in my communities, they don't receive good education because of the lack of teachers and the lack of school infrastructures, buildings.
I will not directly say yes, and I will also not say no. They are getting education, but not as good and qualitative as they are supposed to.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Lowell State say they have revoked an earlier decision to forcefully transfer 3,000 Raja employees from WAU to work in their newly created state. The employees protested against the move, saying it's not easy to settle in Raja. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Omar Ishaq, the Commissioner of Cabinet Affairs in Lowell State, says state officials decided employees who wish to move from WAU to Lowell State could do so on a voluntary basis.
Any civil servant from Raja working in WAU here and doesn't want to go and work in Raja, we don't have any problem with him or her. We are here assuring the commitment of the government to this concern. The government is not going to insist and force anybody to go to Raja.
Last month, WAU state authorities separated the salaries of all civil servants from Raja in accordance to the demands made by the governor of Lowell State, Rizik Zakaria Hassan. 42-year-old Pierre Saadallah Moyo has worked as a civil servant at the Secretariat General in WAU for more than 10 years. Speaking in Arabic, Saadallah says she is relieved the government has revoked the decision to move her to Raja.
I was one of the civil servants who were asked to go to Raja, and when I heard the Lowell State government decision to revoke the order, I was very happy to continue working here in WAU. My husband is from WAU, and I cannot leave my family here and I go to Raja.
47-year-old Rajab Hussein Dahia works with the WAU State Finance Ministry. Hussein says he likes the government's recent decision because he too does not believe that the state officials should force employees to go to their areas of origin against their will. Speaking in Arabic, Hussein argues regardless of whether he works in WAU or Raja, he is still serving the South Sudanese people.
We really support the recent decision by our government of Lowell State to cancel the earlier decision to force civil servants to go to Raja. That makes a lot of sense now to me. They are now flowing the labor laws of our country.
Romano Uchu is the Director General in the WAU State Finance Ministry. He says the decision by Lowell State officials to reverse the order began with the Lowell State Governor.
The pressure was actually going up from the governor of Lowell. He made our governor here. Our governor has to actually to tell the Secretary General to inform all the directors, including me, said that the salary of those of Lowell is released.
President Salva Kiir created Lowell and 27 other states last year in a unilateral presidential order, a move that has been criticized by former First Vice President Riek Machar, U.S., and others in the international community. The Lowell State capital, Raja, was part of the former Western Bahr Ghazal State. Since Mr. Kiir split the country into more states, WAU and Lowell State authorities have been negotiating over how to divide state assets and redistribute civil servants. Violence also erupted in Raja in June. The Lowell State capital was attacked by armed men believed to be loyal to Machar. The town was looted, forcing the state governor and some residents to flee to Awil. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
We now turn to Cameroon, where the government says at least 500 teachers in the north have not reported for duty this school year amid safety concerns. Militant group Boko Haram has attacked schools there in the past, but officials say security has improved. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Maroua.
Children learn to sing the national anthem at the government primary school in Kuseri on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. But there are only two teachers here. Three others did not return for the start of the school year a month ago. Head teacher Quinta Asongwe is one of the two who came back.
It's like a vocation. I was like inborn. Yeah, because when I was a kid, when we were always playing, I always liked playing the part of a teacher. Yeah, so I grew up like that, and I finally decided to fulfill my dreams.
I always had a special admiration for teachers, especially as my mom is a teacher, up to now a nursery teacher.
Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram has targeted schools since its insurgency began in 2009. The nickname of the group, Boko Haram, roughly translates as Western education is sinful. Boko Haram attacked this school in Turu 2 years ago, setting it on fire. Officials say several children were killed or wounded. The government reopened the school this year. Just two of its 8 teachers were present when VOA visited. Teacher Ngenang Timothy said they were traumatized by the attack.
When they came that day, we were so sad because we ran from Turu to Mukolo on foot. We are now back in Turu again. And I think the government has taken a serious measure so as to keep our school safe and to enable us to do our work smoothly.
But other teachers have refused to go back to the north. In the capital, Yaounde, teacher Bayamak Alain told VOA the government should increase their risk allowances and follow through on the statute passed 16 years ago to improve teachers' living conditions.
Vous ne pouvez pas avoir des enseignants qui ont des multiples revendications.
He says teachers have several complaints, yet their employers do not even react to half of them. He says they do not know of any other group in Cameroon whose statute has not been implemented, and that is what has been discouraging them from working in conflict zones. But officials of the Teachers Association of Cameroon, like Tassang Wilfred, say children are paying the price.
We send out a clarion call for teachers to teach the children the nation has put at their disposal with all their energy, in spite of the very harsh conditions in which most of us have to work. We look at the plight of the children, their future seems bleak.
General Jacob Kodji, one of the commanders of Cameroonian troops fighting Boko Haram, has sought to reassure teachers.
En liaison avec les autorités administratives et les responsables des enseignements de base.
He told VOA they have been working in collaboration with the administration and education officials to avoid all attacks. He says they are asking the population, including parents, teachers and students, to report suspicious people and share information to keep everyone safe. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, has also called on the teachers to resume duty. The governor says better security measures have been put in place. As the school year opened last month, the government said 100,000 youths displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency do not have access to education. Officials now say the teacher shortage in the north has put the education of an additional 100,000 students in jeopardy. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua.
Today marks the 50th anniversary of the World Teachers' Day with the theme of valuing teachers, improving their status. But if you are a teacher in South Sudan, you are likely to work under harsh conditions or unpaid and rarely receive your salaries on time. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
1, 2, 3, begin.
Nursery students at St. Teresa Primary School in Torit sing a nursery song with their teacher, Margaret Aling Oluoro. The 6x4 meter classroom accommodates nearly 200 pupils. The students are seated on a white plastic carpet, eager to learn amid their meager resources. Luoro barely has any space to turn around and walk to each child in her class. Luoro comes to class with her 9-month-old baby strapped to her back. She says she has nothing to celebrate on this 50th anniversary of World Teachers Day since she has not able to save any money since becoming a teacher about 4 years ago. Like many teachers across South Sudan, Oluoro hopes to change her career to something that pays better wages.
Teachers are not paid well. The salary they are getting is less. Some are getting 300, which cannot buy even a bowl of a flour or what. Teachers are facing a lot of problems, and most of them now leaving the job.
The Motong State Government has not organized any event to commemorate the World Teachers' Day. Teachers here say they would have enjoyed a celebration but cannot afford to sponsor one themselves. Leke Albert is the head teacher of Torit Day Secondary School. Albert says both state and national officials must improve teachers' working conditions in particular and the education sector in general across the country.
Teachers, what I welfare and situations are not taken seriously by our politicians. Because if they have that interest of having teachers in their hearts, of having teachers as the key role players in the development of any country or in our state here, I think this day should have been given a special consideration.
Imoya Jakino, a teacher at Torit Day Secondary School, says despite all the challenges, South Sudanese teachers are determined to continue teaching, hoping that one day, soon, working conditions will improve.
When you accept yourself to be a teacher, don't think about the salary. Just you think about your profession, because you are chosen to be a teacher. Our field here, before thinking about money, you think about the future of the nation first. Put yourself. You are think about your country, you love country first, or your children or your students before thinking about the money.
Imotong State Education Minister Jacob Atare acknowledges that South Sudan teachers face many challenges, but says he is hopeful that at least the salary issue will be addressed in the next budget.
We are going to, I think the national ministry, we are going to do something for this new budget for this coming year.
Atari urges teachers not to give up.
I'm really urging teachers in Imotong State to be courageous.
UNESCO says the Education 2030 Framework for Action highlights the fact that teachers are fundamental for quality education. UNESCO stresses that teachers be sufficiently trained, recruited and paid well, motivated and supported within efficient and effectively governed systems. To do that, UNESCO says, teachers worldwide must be valued. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
That story by Dimo from Torit brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio and Mamoria. Seika. Malute.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Memoria. I am John Tanza in Washington. It was a nice time to be with you this evening on this World Teachers Day. My maths teacher was not my friend, but here I am still talking to you. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.